Let's talk about game three and a guy that certainly knows a lot about this Cavalier basketball team. He's my co-host on Countdown at the Q down at Quicken Loans Arena prior to Cavalier home game, Scott Zarrilla. He now joins us on the line to take a look at what may transpire in game three tonight as the Cavaliers take on the Raptors up in Toronto. Z-Man, great to have you with us. Let's look back real quick to game two on Wednesday night. Boy, another dominant performance by the Cavaliers. Just wire to wire, they absolutely dismantled Toronto 125-103. From your perspective, what do you take out of game two where the Cavaliers go up 2-0 into game three tonight in Toronto?
Well, Tim, first of all, they did what they had to do, which is rule of thumb, take care of home court advantage. And the Cavaliers did that. You know, the original concern was, were they going to be rusty having the 8 days off? They showed that there was no rust into game one. The one day in between, they stayed sharp. They looked even sharper on game two. As you mentioned, came right out of the gate and looked sharp from start to finish. They took advantage, I think, of, you know, the Raptors made a couple of lineup adjustments to try to counteract what the Cavaliers were doing. Just didn't work. The Cavaliers had an answer for everything that the Raptors put at them. And the 125 points is a franchise record for points in a playoff game. So without question, one of their best playoff performances we've seen in a long time.
Scott, when you and I talked Wednesday night down at the Q, we were talking about the fact that if Toronto goes back 0-2, they can draw on last year. The fact that, hey, we were down 0-2. In 2016, won the two at home to even the series up. And I kind of amended that a little bit by saying, well, it depends on how they go back. If they go back off a real tight game where it went right down to the wire
and
the Cavaliers got them, you go, well, we were right there. We just didn't get it done, but we were hanging with the Cavs. But if you go back 0-2 after getting crushed a second time in a row, that's a whole different mentality. Do you sense that with this Raptor team, that they are really reeling, they're wobbling on the ropes, per se?
Well, you know, Tim, I'm not around the team, so I can only go by what I'm seeing in terms of post-game press conferences, shoot-arounds, et cetera. But I tend to agree with you. I don't know that the confidence level of the Raptors quite is what you would have thought based on the way you laid it out, what they did last year. Again, to my point earlier that the Raptors, you know, I don't want to say that they panicked, but it's somewhat common to make a change in your lineup. It's pretty rare when you make two changes to your starting lineup. And I think that is a sign that the Raptors were caught a little off guard and maybe, you know, not sure of what's going on. So they took that extra step to do a little something out of the ordinary, and that didn't work for them either. So I think that when you have confidence of going home, but you did not play well, your adjustments did not pay off, and your best player, arguably your best player in Kyle Lowry, went down with an injury, and he is a game-time decision. If you're the Raptors, quite honestly, I don't know how confident you can be. And we didn't even mention how otherworldly LeBron James is playing right now. When you really put it down on paper, everything is going against the Raptors except the fact that they're at home. Is that going to be enough, though? That only goes so far. You still have to be able to, you know, execute and play well on the out on the floor. And if the Cavaliers continue to play as well as they have, I don't know that the Raptors have too many answers.
Again, we're talking with Scott Zarrilla, senior producer of the Cavaliers Radio Network, as he joins us as part of our Countdown at the Brew. We're here at the Brew Kettle in Amherst. Glad you could join us on AM 930 WEOL. We've kind of barged in on Bullseye on the afternoon show with Bull Barch and Matt Douglas. So, guys, I'll let you chime in here if you have a question or a comment or two for Mr. Zarrilla on the line.
Well, yeah, so Scott, you hit on a number of different points there. One of the things I really wanted to emphasize, I know I'm not exactly breaking any ground here, but you just moments ago mentioned how otherworldly LeBron James was. I think we've been kind of spoiled the last few years just kind of watching him, almost to the point where when we get into the playoffs, we expect these otherworldly performances like this from him. And I think it's interesting, when you watch him game in, game out, there's a different sense with the other four guys that are playing on the floor with him. They almost expect to win when he's on the floor. When he comes off, it's a totally different story. But I think when you enter an equation like this with LeBron playing the way that he is playing, I don't know if he's playing like this. I still don't think that even the best of the best can beat the Cavs. And I hate to look too far ahead here, but if he keeps playing like this, I still like the Cavaliers' chances if they're fortunate enough to make it into the NBA Finals and take on the Golden State Warriors, which is what everybody's expecting.
Well, Bull, I'll tell you what. I want to agree with you, but I'm going to be 100% honest. And that, as you said, it's a little bit far down the road. I don't know if you've been watching the Warriors. They're hitting on all cylinders as well. I believe they've, going back to the regular season, obviously, the Warriors have, I believe, won 23 of their last 24 games. They are a machine at the moment. However, we have the best player. And as we saw last year, sometimes the best player is all you need. So for now, what LeBron is doing is almost unprecedented. Over 30 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists, couple of steals, couple of blocks. I mean, I believe it's 3 steals and 2 blocks per game. So you're making a case right there. Defensively, he alone is keeping the Raptors down anywhere from 10 to 15 points per game, if you think about it that way. So for right now, he is the best player on the floor, and he's leading the guys, which when you look at the Raptors, you know, they've got 2 really good players, but they don't have one guy that leads them. I think one guy plays better than the other. They both play well. That's all well and good. But they don't have the guy to set the tone the way that the Cavaliers do. And right now, I just think that, again, barring something unforeseen, there's no reason to think he's not going to continue to play this way. And I just don't believe that the Raptors have any answer for him specifically. And when he leads the way he does and everybody falls into place, you see the Cavaliers play as well as they do right now.
You mentioned the 2 guys for the Raptors there, Scott. DeMar DeRozan, obviously, one of them, Kyle Lowry, the other. He had a bad ankle injury. He's a game-time decision, it looks like, right now for the Toronto Raptors.
Yep.
What's that mean to the Raptors if he can't get back into the roster?
Well, I tell you, Matt, it might be certain doom for the Raptors. They may go extinct again. You know, Corey Joseph is a decent backup guard, but he's not going to... He can't give you the things that Kyle Lowry can. Watching Kyle this morning following shoot-around, he did not participate in practice yesterday, did not participate in shoot-around today. He said he's just getting the usual massage, ice, stim, etc. He's going to get to the arena prior to the ballgame, so of course he's there now working himself out. And he said he doesn't have any concern with going straight forward. It's the lateral side to side, and playing defense is his concern. If he cannot go, you're losing 22, 25 points, potentially for 35 to 40. He's your playmaker. He gets everything going for the Raptors. That's a huge, huge loss for them, and I just don't think that they have enough. They may not have enough with him at 100% to win 4 of the next 5 against the Cavaliers without him. I just don't see it happening.
One last question. Oh, sorry, Tim.
No, go ahead.
I just had another question for Scott here, too. I got the impression, watching that game, that after the Cavs had developed a nice little lead, they seemed content letting the Raptors run their offense right through Valanciunas. And not that Valanciunas isn't a good player. He is. I mean, I admire the inside-outside game that he has. But did you get that sense that the Cavs were okay with the Raptors trying to go that route? It seemed odd at the time, only because, you know, Valanciunas wasn't even in the starting lineup in that game a couple days ago. However, they seemed content, the Cavs did, just letting them run their offense through Valanciunas, because it was almost like they knew, look, if that's what they want to do to get their points, that's fine, but we have a nice double-digit lead at this point, and if they continue to go that route, there's no way in the world they can cut into this deficit.
Well, boy, you're spot on. After the ball game, Coach Lou actually addressed that very point, and he made it clear that, you know, even though Lowry went down, their defensive principles and plan of attack is what we've heard many times with plenty of teams: let the other guys beat you. And the plan is to not let Lowry and or DeRozan beat the Cavaliers. So if that means Jonas Valanciunas is going to get, you know, 20, 25 points, couple, you know, 12 rebounds, whatever it may be, that's fine. They do not want the top guns to beat them, and they were very satisfied to just, because what happens is they're so guard-oriented, that's how they're accustomed to playing. You start playing through your center, who normally is just an ancillary piece, you start running everything through him, that's not your normal way of running the offense. And again, Valanciunas is a solid big man. He can give you numbers. He will not beat you. Lowry and DeRozan can beat you, certainly together. One of them are good enough to get 40. Valanciunas, unlikely to get 40. You're spot on. Cavaliers allowed the Raptors to adjust their offense and go through Valanciunas, and as you could see, just wasn't nearly enough to challenge the Cavaliers.
Boy, no doubt. Hey, Scott, we got about a minute left, but I did want to ask you one final question. Obviously, Monday night, it was assists to field goal attempts. That was the stat that really stood out when you and I got back together on Wednesday prior to game two. We're going over that stat sheet. What off that stat sheet, or what off just the game itself on Wednesday, really jumped out at you?
Well, hitting eight straight threes to start the game, I thought that really opens up the floor, you know, for starters. We've seen it when the Cavaliers are making 12 and 13 three-pointers a game. It just totally changes the complexion of the offense, because it opens up the floor even more for LeBron and Kyrie and guys like that. So when you hit eight, and remember too, Tim, their assist-to-turnover ratio for game two was really good as well. I don't have the number off the top of my head. It was very high. They had more turnovers, but their assists were high as well. But when you hit your first eight threes and jump out and set the tone like that, that was huge. That was really big.
Well, no doubt. All right, my friend, I know you have work to do tonight, so we'll let you get back to your chores in the Cavs radio room. Appreciate you stopping by, and look forward to chatting with you again. Hey, maybe we'll have you on Sunday.
Well, you just let me know when you need me, but here's the thing. You go enjoy your wings. I got to go break out my ham sandwich.
We'll do that, man. We've got a great menu here to choose from.
Scott, I know Cirilla, you do. You guys enjoy.
All right, man. Scott from the Cavalier Radio Network, senior producer, my co-host on the Cobos Insurance Center, Countdown at the Q. Tonight he joins us on Countdown at the Brew as we are here.